This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Broadband Wireless Access World. We're about to speak to Mark O. Miller, who's a spokesperson for Intel Corporation. Welcome to Broadband Wireless Access World.
Thank you for having me.
What we're going to talk about is Muni Broadband, and we're going to talk about Intel's role in it, both technically and politically. Why don't you start off, though, by just telling people a little bit about Intel's place in the tech world and what its leadership consists in these days.
Sure. Well, as most folks know, Intel is most popular for the CPUs that are made in PCs, but in recent years, we've made a pretty significant effort around wireless. A big part of our business is around the push around that, most notably the Centrino brand for wireless computing for laptops, specifically the technology around Wi-Fi. We've made a more recent push in the last year or so around its what we consider its big brother around WiMAX, a higher speed, longer distance version of Wi-Fi. So we've been very involved in the technology side, as well as you indicated, on the city and government side in ensuring that broadband wireless gets deployed in the U.S. and around the globe.
Okay, maybe you could just say a little bit about the chicken and egg issue here. Did Intel get involved in wireless because it thought it was going to be the coming thing, or has it become the coming thing because Intel has gotten involved in it?
Oh, Intel has been involved in the wireless effort for a number of years. We saw it as a huge opportunity for the way people would want to compute and communicate in our laptops and using our chips for some time. And we made a more focused effort probably in the 2003 time frame with the Centrino brand to build awareness around this new way of communicating through laptop computers and the like.
Okay,
so we've been in this for a while.
Has Intel's strategy been essentially to put the wireless capability essentially on the client side in the laptops, or has it also been involved on the transmission side, on the server side, of providing the WiMAX, the Wi-Fi, and now WiMAX infrastructure that does the server side of the equation?
It's been both. It's what we have been calling convergence. It's making things that compute, traditional computer, communicate by adding the Wi-Fi capability, and it's taking the things that traditionally communicate, a cell phone or, like you said, the infrastructure things, and having it compute more. So Intel provides processing and computing capability as well as communications on the radio front, both in the network infrastructure, as you're talking about with WiMAX and so forth, as well as putting communications into the compute, what we call platforms, like with a PC.
So in addition to the aspects that Intel has been able to provide within the computer, it's also now able to handle the internet connection transmission part of the
That's correct,
of the process.
Of a customer premise equipment, a residential gateway, they're called different things, obviously, by different customers of ours, but yes, that's correct.
So essentially the signals can originate on Intel chips, be transmitted to other Intel chips in client devices, and then be processed by Intel chips, so it's the electrons and the information spend their entire existence within an Intel environment.
That's the hope.
Okay. Distinguish between Wi-Fi and WiMAX technically and in terms of their capability?
Sure. So from a layman's term on a technical standpoint, obviously Wi-Fi uses unlicensed spectrum and has a distance of, you know, anywhere from 30 feet, 10 meters or so, and are ideal for localized areas on Starbucks, McDonald's, hotspots,
or
home, exactly right. And that they usually provide, you know, 1 to 2 to 3 megabits per second bandwidth speed.
Right.
WiMAX, although the standard has just been recently ratified by the IEEE and the mobile standard is still under specs, theoretical limits of WiMAX has been several miles. We have had customers do field trials to where they've gotten upward 2 miles with the broadband capability at 1 to 2 megabits per second bandwidth as well. So essentially, instead of it just being a hot spot, it's a hot zone.
Now, I did an interview several months back with someone from Alvarion that makes WiMAX equipment. Do you work with them?
They are customers of ours. Yeah.
Great. And they were talking, they did a test down in Georgia where they were getting WiMAX connectivity 30 miles away. Is that within the purview of this?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I don't know their configuration or topology or anything else. I mean, right now it's all miles, I'm not going to contradict it.
But what you're saying, it's pretty standard for WiMAX to be able to send 1 or 2 megabits out at 2 miles.
Sure. Now, again, I don't know if it was on a relatively rural, flat spot without buildings or trees or hills to interfere, what spectrum they use. There's a number of variables that can affect, obviously, the bandwidth and the distance in which wireless can travel effectively. But, again, theoretically, I have heard as high as 30 miles.
Okay, now, is WiMAX also use unlicensed spectrum?
That's what's being worked out. There's currently what we call wireless internet service providers. A customer of ours, TowerStream, out on the East Coast, are using unlicensed spectrum and doing a lot of pre-WiMAX efforts very successfully, delivering voice and data applications. However, there are, you know, works with the city governments and the like at the 2.5 and 3.5 gigahertz spectrum levels. But so we think we'll see a combination of unlicensed and licensed usage for WiMAX. But we believe license will likely, you know, be more popular.
Okay. Now, are there costs or other impediments standing in the way of WiMAX as a total replacement of Wi-Fi? It would seem if you could get a 2 mile radius over a 10 or even 100 meter radius, you're likely to go that way. What's the cost benefit relationship between Wi-Fi and WiMAX?
I think that's to be determined because the deployments haven't totally built out yet, and you also have to remember that the economics, volume economics of Wi-Fi has had a 2 or 3 year jump or lead on WiMAX. So we see coexistence of the two technologies for a significant amount of time. Over time, as we get into volume productions and there's more and more deployments of WiMAX, the costs get driven down, and again, the mobile WiMAX standard starts to become deployed. You then have, theoretically, a WiMAX add-in card or bundled WiMAX in with a laptop, for example, once they hit those price points, to where now the lines between Wi-Fi and WiMAX may get a little blurred, but in the 2005 and really 2006 time frame, WiMAX will largely be what we'd call a backhaul technology. It's the last mile wireless DSL to the home, for example, DSL or cable alternative, those types of things.
Okay, say something about the mobility aspect of both Wi-Fi and WiMAX. You're talking about essentially what we're waiting for now, it seems like, are the standards for mobile WiMAX.
Correct.
And who's working on those standards?
The IEEE.
Okay, and is there some timetable when they're expected?
I don't want to speak for them. I think we're obviously hoping that we'll get that nailed down, you know, first half of this year, but it's a pretty sophisticated technology. The D version of this was the fixed wireless, as I talked about, the DSL or cable alternative.
Right.
That obviously didn't have the power and all the issues around mobility that complicate things. So I think, you know, we're hoping for a resolution fairly
soon. Okay. Now, so is it going to be Intel strategy to produce Centrinos or some other named or generation of chip to handle the WiMAX connections?
Yeah, we have talked about bringing WiMAX to the notebook in the late 2006-2007 time frame,
right,
and then ultimately even into the handset, so even a smartphone, 2008.
So the roadmap at this point would say smart handsets for WiMAX at 2008.
Possibly, yes.
Okay. Now, so that's sort of the technical picture. Who is either deploying or testing WiMAX right now?
Gosh, there's been several companies who publicly announced their intent and are at various stages, and a lot of them aren't yet announced. We have some obviously some brand names of Alcatel, Siemens, who have announced their intent to move to building gear for WiMAX networks. You've had AT&T in the U.S. Make a deal with Intel recently, saying they will offer WiMAX-based services in the future. Clearwire, Craig McCaw's venture, is also going to be deploying worldwide WiMAX. So there's...
Does he have a timetable, Clearwire?
His is also targeting the mobile WiMAX rollout, and I believe he's, you know, again, we're all kind of waiting for the spec to be defined and so forth, but I believe he's also in line with our thinking of late 2006, 2007.
Okay. Okay, but there's no doubt now that there's enough momentum on all sides of this that's where things are going
to
be going.
I think the best way to describe it is that it feels an awful lot like Wi-Fi 2001. So
right.
we're a couple of years away from what we saw happen to Wi-Fi in 2003. But yes, the momentum's going, the ecosystem's getting behind it, the governments are taking a look at it. So there's a lot of excitement and momentum and activity happening. But the deployments and that were, you know, but it's feeling really good.
Okay, and a part of that is that enough tests have been done, proof of concept and beyond.
Exactly right.
People know it works.
Exactly right.
And so it's just a matter of working out the details in a sense now.
Yeah, getting the specs ratified for the mobile side of it, getting the infrastructure deployments happening and, you know, building awareness of it.
So okay. So and that's that building awareness is part of what we're trying to do here so that maybe we can even speed things up a little bit.
Sure.
Now let's get to the question of municipal broadband
right.
and how that fits into this. I did an interview, I guess, maybe November of last year with the CIO of Philadelphia,
mm-hmm.
Diana Neff, and she was talking about a study group that the mayor had set up there to investigate wireless for the city. WiMAX didn't seem to be a big part of it then. It was more about setting up a lot of Wi-Fi systems. What, if anything, do you know about what's happening specifically in Philadelphia in terms of what they're looking into to do their broadband wireless access system?
I don't know that Intel has been directly involved, and I've been trying to pay attention on the periphery.
Right.
I do know that Philadelphia is a lot like many of the other cities that we've been involved with, like Rio Rancho, serving as a consultant, an advisor, and a technology partner, if you will, in helping them to unwire their region, whether it's a county, a city, or what have you. I think it's very similar.
Just in a general, there's also a similar panel that's been set up here in Los Angeles that I cover on a website called Unwired LA that's looking into the question also for Los Angeles. Let me ask you, if you're being consulted by some generic city, what do you tell them in terms of Wi-Fi versus WiMAX, in terms of the best way that they could proceed given the timetables that we've just discussed and the fact that cities are built up as the strategy of choice?
Well, so that's an interesting question because every city, every county, every municipality is going to have a different objective.
Right.
And that's part of what it is that I think works best is that they have to decide what's best for their citizens, what they need in terms of emergency services, so on and so forth, would largely depend upon how you would roll out a broadband offering or you know, recommend.
So you're saying there's some things that are better with Wi-Fi now and some things that they ought to look to WiMAX?
Well, I think a lot of it right now, frankly, is an issue of timing. I mean, WiMAX deployments won't happen until, you know, later this year, middle to later this year, and if
right.
they want to get going now, Wi-Fi is really their best option. There's certainly pre-WiMAX efforts that's really, really close to what we anticipate, you know, true WiMAX certified gear will look like. And they may want to go that route, and we would certainly talk to them about that.
When I started selling computers in the early 80s, I used to tell people, yes, they're going to get better and cheaper, but if you keep waiting until
it
does everything and costs nothing, you won't have been able to use it in the interim.
Right, exactly right. And I think the great thing about wireless is that the infrastructure is modular enough, is one way to put it, or flexible enough to where, and frankly, hopefully the cost will be at such a point to where to add more or to augment with WiMAX backhaul or what have you shouldn't be a, you know, complete, it's not like poured concrete.
Right.
And you'd have to dig up and redo.
Right.
So I think, yeah, if people are anxious to get going now, we're certainly anxious to help them, knowing that there's technology like WiMAX on the horizon shouldn't prevent them.
Okay. And now that's in particular, you mentioned pouring concrete or laying fiber optic cable, for example.
Sure.
What's the dynamic there technically in terms of speed, in terms of ease of installation and ease of upgrade, and how do you view the fiber optic to the node, fiber optic to the home sector in comparison with Wi-Fi and WiMAX?
Now. Well, I think ultimately the goal is to get Wi-Fi and WiMAX to a point to where it's technically equivalent, both in terms of bandwidth and uploads and downloads, and as well as cost.
Is that going to be possible on the technical side? Mostly everyone I talk to here says there's nothing faster than fiber optic to the home. If you plug it right into the home, that's as fast as you're going to get. You can't do that with wireless.
Oh, that's true.
Is that true?
Yeah, I'm based sound, my understanding, that is true. It's my comment about being equivalent would
right.
be meeting the particular, you know, whether it's a home office user or what have you, you know, meeting their base requirements for broadband.
What are this? Well, base requirements.
Wow.
Basic requirement used to be dial-up.
Exactly.
Basic
right.
requirement is now 200.
It's a moving target,
right.
sure, but I mean, if I think a lot of folks would be satisfied for quite a while on 1 to 2 megabits, but I think the point where I was getting is that I don't know that it's a direct competitor to folks who get fiber to the home now. The issue is that if you're a telecommunications provider or service provider and you want to get to the outermost parts of an area or to remote parts that you can't currently serve now, or if you're San Francisco and it costs $100 a foot to dig up across the street,
right.
it makes it very, very difficult to add more business, to add more subscribers. So what wireless then would do, instead of them digging that up, they would then be able to place a WiMAX signal, if you will, on the end of that node, beam it out to another, you know, 2 to 4 miles worth of rural customers.
Right.
And they would then receive that WiMAX signal, maybe produce Wi-Fi within the home, and now they've just increased their customer base with very low cost, and instead of digging up and adding more fiber to the home.
Okay, before we get to the political questions, just let me touch on one more technology. Broadband over power line. Is Intel involved with that at all, and if so, how?
That is not something that I'm as familiar with, so I would hesitate to
okay.
say definitively. I would say no, though.
Okay. Now, the speeds that you're talking about, 1 or 2 megabits, you're saying that that's pretty much going to be within the capacity of Wi-Fi and WiMAX.
Sure.
And is that good enough to essentially do video on demand for people who want it?
Ultimately, we think it will serve that, yes.
Okay. Now, the question is, as I just raised it on the technical level, between fiber optic, which is being SBC, for example, said it's going to spend $4 billion over the next few years in its service area to put fiber to the node, fiber to the home.
Mm-hmm.
SBC and Verizon are the companies that, Verizon in particular in Pennsylvania, was active in seeing to it that the municipalities in Pennsylvania could not offer broadband muni wireless. They ended up at the end waiving the right to refuse to have the right of first refusal for Philadelphia, but apparently they've kept it for the rest of the state. What's Intel's view on and involvement in the issue of telcos and cable companies getting together to say to state legislatures, we want you to pass legislation prohibiting cities from getting into the wireless or other kinds of broadband business?
Well, Intel's position, or we follow some pretty simple principles that I think are appealing to a lot of folks. Ever since we shared those principles at a recent wireless event in the Bay Area, we've received a lot of support, and the principles are this: is that, you know, more bandwidth is good, and the reason is it helps to bridge the digital divide in this country and around the world. We think it should be broadly available.
How is, by the way, how is the United States doing? I interviewed a lawyer named Jim Baller a few weeks ago. We were talking about the broadband gap. He was saying
right.
that the U.S. is in no way the leader in broadband deployment these days.
That's true. Our penetration rates are well behind. The whole world is behind Korea and Japan. I think they're in the 30 to 40% or even higher.
Right.
The U.S. is in the high teens, low 20s in broadband penetration.
And how important is that for economic competitiveness and economic development in the United States?
We think it's paramount. We think that's one of the key areas, not only, you know, country by country, but, you know, getting back to your issue about municipalities, I mean, to help cities and local governments be competitive with others, we think it's one of those things. It's paramount.
And what can it do for cities? What can it do for residents of cities? And we're talking about the city government and the residents of the city.
Sure. So you know, it can certainly, the sharing of information. It's just much like what happened with the internet in the mid 90s, late 90s. Is more access, more information enables more competitiveness, whether it's, you know, city by city or country by country, as we said. I just think there are some inherent benefits of the ability to have access and sharing of information and data and so forth amongst each other. I mean, there's always the applications, the entertainment and convenience applications, video on demand, voice, data services. But from a competitive standpoint, that's really the center point.
Okay, now the inventor of Ethernet, Mr. Metcalf, said that networks are valuable as the square of the number of people attached to them.
Exactly right.
And multiplied, I like to add as a corollary, multiplied by the bandwidth. How does that apply in the cases of cities?
Well, so as I understand Metcalf's law, with quotes around it, was that, you know, everybody benefits in terms of the services and the costs available as these things as it expands virally.
Right. It's essentially the having one telephone doesn't do you any good. One fax machine doesn't do you any good. One computer doesn't do you as much good as when it's connected in the network.
Right. Right. And so to be specific would be very difficult, simply because you just don't know what you're unlocking with this broadband. I'll give you an example. Sirius or satellite radio, very successful, doing very well, has about, I believe, 4 to 5 million users, and has however many stations. But on the internet and in IP-based networks, you've got upward 10,000 different radio stations, if you will.
Right.
That people can listen to over their on their PC, but the problem is right now that's not mobile,
right?
And so you're not able to take that with you anywhere. So it's locked in what we basically call this, you know, IP network,
right?
Waiting to come out. And so once you start having these mobile networks, once you start having these citywide municipal broadband networks, you're now able to unlock a lot of. And that's just one, again, entertainment convenient-based application.
Right. So meaning some combination, as we've discussed, of Wi-Fi and WiMAX, which essentially puts a wireless cloud over and through the city,
yep,
opens up 10,000 radio stations to iPod-like devices that get radio signals, could be specialized to get radio signals, so you have your choice of 10,000 channels.
Exactly right, and exactly what you want, when you want it, and, you know, no commercials and so forth. Now, is this a great example for the competitiveness of a city? Not exactly, but you can, you know, read between it to understand what happens when you unlock the potential, when you lay out that cloud.
Right.
What could possibly emerge?
Well, let's talk about something else. What we're talking about with that 10,000 radio stations is entertainment or information, and it's essentially one way. Now, it's essentially just as easy to put voice over IP into that cloud as anything else, isn't it?
Exactly right.
And I'm going to do an interview pretty soon about the F1000, which is a Wi-Fi telephone that UT Starcom has set up and that is working with Vonage to provide phone service over wireless using those handsets. What are the implications of that, say, for incumbent telephone providers?
I think it's, you know, broadband wireless is a potentially disruptive technology for a lot of current business models and things, and I think that it's going to certainly challenge the status quo and you know, create new business opportunities and ultimately, hopefully, benefit for end users at the end of the day.
Okay, now in the middle of the day, what we have, though, is telephone companies, rather, it seems to me, than competing on a technical level here, going to the legislature, where they've contributed a lot of money to the incumbent legislators, and
right,
said, we want you to prohibit cities from doing this. Is that a very good strategy?
Yeah, we're, again, part of what we talked about earlier was that Intel is really trying to encourage and discuss publicly our position on this, and essentially trying to appeal to this middle ground. Bans and exclusivities and those don't work. When you have a combination of public and private partnerships, they work, they make sense, and we've seen it work to date, and like I said, in a number of cities that have deployed this. I think it's a lot of you know, protectionism or what have you that's working out, and people it's just not necessary to go to either extreme.
Talk a little bit more about that mixed model that you just mentioned, a mixed public-private partnership. What does that involve?
Again, it's going to take various forms.
Right, but
it's
a general principle.
Sure, so general principle is that a government, as I talked about earlier, would come to its own understanding and plan of what it is that it would want. So we want to be able to provide our citizens with 1 megabit per second at, you know, $30 or $40 a month. I mean, this is a very generic general term.
Right.
But they come out with a plan, and so it's not completely undercut, and it's not using tax dollars to, you know, subsidize all of this, and now it's free.
Right.
But in the same respect, you're now also not giving first right of refusal to a particular vendor. So now they open it up, much like a government contract, and they get a bidding process, request for proposal, and then, you know, companies and organizations can get together and they can bid. So you'd have a combination of a, you know, an AOL and a Verizon or what have you, and they come and they say, this is the services we're going to provide.
Right.
And this is the technology we can do it. And that meet your specifications, that meet your plan.
And the two major elements of those are the essentially the price point. How much broadband do you get, and how much do you have to pay as an end user?
Exactly.
And the city sets that standard, and you set us a very generic standard for that one megabit, $30-$40 a month.
Right. And you know, in one scenario, and again, everything's going to depend.
Right.
But in one scenario, let's say, you know, all the bids come in and they say, look, we can't do this for anything less than $50 a month.
Right.
Well, then the government has the choice or option to then help subsidize that to get it down to $30.
Now, would it subsidize it by giving money per user, say, for example, to what you just said as a hypothetical combination of Verizon and AOL? Or at what point can the city say, we're already providing streets, we're already providing water, we're providing electricity, we think that broadband connectivity is just as essential a utility for our citizens as those other things.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to build an infrastructure and operate it ourselves, operate it for our city, offer it to other people, or build it and offer it on a wholesale basis to big or small ISPs who can then take advantage of it for offering their own service and or voice over IP. What?
All the above. I mean, there's just no shortage of how they can do this. They could, you know, pass a bond that helps pay for it to buy down the cost per month.
They right.
There's just no shortage of things that they can do. The thing that all we're appealing to is just don't take one extreme or the other. Ban or exclusive deal, it just is not the best way to propagate broadband, you know, on a broad basis.
Okay, so then let's talk a little more specifically. The initiative so far seems to be with the phone companies, the cable companies, getting together and going to state legislatures and trying to prohibit municipal ownership
right.
or operation or maybe even the standard setting that you're talking about.
Right.
What is Intel doing proactively to say, go to the legislature in California and say, call it the open skies policy or whatever, and say cities do have the right to do all the things we're talking about here. Is Intel supporting efforts like that now yet?
Sure. I mean, we have a group within Washington, D.C. and throughout all of our sites and that are working on influencing both legislators as well as through our channels of the customers to try and, you know, bring this middle ground, right? So I mean, we're working both ends. We're not in anybody's particular camp. Obviously we're for broadband, and the best way to deploy that through our history and through our experience has been, you know, a combination of both. So you know, we will encourage legislators to not pass bans. We'll encourage our customers to not seek exclusive rights. There's just a number of ways that we can do that. And Intel has been successful doing that so far.
Is this kind of unprecedented in the sense that here's we've just drawn the connection here between the technology and the politics.
Right.
Is this a kind of unprecedented, or is this a repetition of some old patterns of political obstacles to technological rollouts?
Well,
from where you sit,
yeah, I'm not a policy expert
right.
and don't have a lot of history in it, but I do know enough to say that it may be some variant of things that we've done in the past.
Right.
And you know, as you well know, as technology over the last 20, 25 years with the PC, you know, it always poses concern and question whether it's intellectual property
right.
Sharing
right.
Between you know other states and other countries
right.
you know, that's always been a concern, and so we've had to work with governments and private enterprises. So I don't think it's that aspect is
right.
New. I think
I'm thinking about that. What the biggest issues have been involving technology politics so far has sort of been spam and have been peer-to-peer sharing and intellectual property rights in general. But this is sort of the first time in which the government wants to take the lead technologically, and there are other corporate forces that are saying no, we don't want competition from we don't want competition from the government.
Right. I think from that aspect, especially in the U.S., again, not the policy expert, but it is the first that I can remember.
And in other developed countries, Korea, Japan, and the EU. Where are the governments on this? Do you know?
They're all at different stages, looking at it, some more aggressively than others, but all are looking at broadband and trying to figure out the best way to offer it, to deploy it. You remember with the 3G spectrum out in Europe, early 2000s, there was the auctions or the bidding of spectrum there that cost telcos billions of dollars before the bubble burst.
Right.
So, I mean, that was one way of the EU allocating it that way.
Right. In general, though, what's going on in Asia and Europe is that national governments are committed to broadbanding their countries.
Yes.
And they're looking at is it going to be WiMAX in this corner and Wi-Fi over there and so on. But in terms of encouraging municipalities to move forward with something, that's not much of an issue in those places, is it?
No. I mean, it's more of, you know, we all agree that we're going to do it. We all agree that it's good. We all agree that it's going to help us competitively and help enrich the lives of our citizens, so on and so forth.
Right.
It's now taken to the next level of how.
Right. Okay.
But it's not a if technology, you know, or should we do this? It's
right.
A when. When should we and how
okay.
should we?
Okay. Talk a little bit more about what you were just talking about in terms of mobilizing. We were talking much earlier here about the Intel inside and Intel outside nature of this. There are millions of people who use Intel products for computing and for wireless already. How are you mobilizing them around this goal of mixed openness that we've been talking about?
You mean reaching out to the individual consumer?
Right. Or if you are individual consumer, in other words, to say to tell them that they can get more broadband at lower costs on their Intel processor if certain policies are in place or certain other ones aren't.
I don't know that we are seeking to activate the individual user or what have you. Obviously, our responsibility is to the customer is to or the end user is that to get the best experience out of your laptop. We are going to try and provide the infrastructure to make it possible. If you're living in an area that only gets dial-up, you know, John Q. customer, we are going to do everything we can to get broadband everywhere.
So which groups are you trying to mobilize in terms of press and in terms of legislators and opinion leaders and so on? What's the strategy there?
Yeah, it would be through our policy folks in D.C. on down. So we've got a huge, you know, government affairs folks to try and share this policy with them and work with them and answer their questions. It's in the local sales force, if you will, with particular customers and cities who are feet on the street looking at deploying this now. We get calls that say, look, we want to do this. We're hearing you're taking the lead on this. Help us. And so we'll go in and work almost on a city-by-city basis. But it's predominantly with customers through governments and, you know, city-by-city deployments.
So there's a kind of lobbying war underway now then between the combined telcos and cable companies, the incumbent broadband people, and the wireless sector pretty much led by Intel. Is that what's shaping up here?
If there's, Intel's taken more of a middle ground than that. I mean, I don't think we're, like I said, in any one camp.
Right.
I think if there is, you know, this trend happening where you've got one side trying to stop another and one seeking more exclusive rights than another, we're frankly trying to settle both issues on both sides.
Okay. Maybe you can address the issue that's principally raised. There were a few arguments raised by Verizon against what Philadelphia wanted to do, to get back to specifics. And essentially they said municipalities can tax people, they have rights of ways, they don't have to pay taxes on their own services, they can be a monopoly. How much integrity does it sound like coming from companies that are essentially tens of billions of dollar monopolies, talking about organizations that barely know where their next paychecks are coming from, to make this argument that it's an unfair competition for cities to offer services that private corporations may, at their whim, decide to offer at some later time if they decide it'll make them more money than not doing it.
Yeah, and we're obviously not in favor of you know, anyone setting you know, exclusive rights or a ban. I mean, I understand the government's position that they don't want to be beholden to the private sector, and I understand the private sector's position that they don't want a government to undercut or you know, to pose unfair. I mean, that's not.
And how does Intel see the resolution of that disagreement between the private sector and the public sector?
Is through this public-private partnership.
Okay.
Is for the government to figure out a plan on how they would like to have this rolled out, and then have an open bidding process to seek from either incumbents or, you know, again, there's these emerging wireless internet service providers. Maybe it's just a small startup that wants to possibly get the bid, and you know, there's just the open democratic way of approaching this.
Okay. Specifically in Indiana, how familiar are you with what's been proposed there?
I'm not.
You're not? Okay. Well, you can listen to the interview that I did with the guy who's the co-author of the bill there.
Okay.
And you can see what you want to do there. All right. I think we've managed to get some of the technical specifics and the political situation. Any final words on what Intel's vision of the wireless future is? For cities?
Well, we're obviously pushing hard to have broadband everywhere. We are big proponents of broadband, both in wireless and wired, frankly, and are doing what we can to have this be a win-win situation where governments can meet the needs and services of their citizens, and for businesses to be able to deploy and manage their businesses appropriately. And just think that there's a win-win situation here, that if everyone were to take a step back and take a look at this holistically.
Okay. Thank you very much for helping to set the terms of the discussion here and give people something that they can start with to increase their understanding of what the situation is and what it could be in the future.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you very much.
Bye now.
Bye.